Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal-Republican, dated Wednesday, June 6, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the headline article. It's under the banner of Muhammad Aquifer. And the headline reads, Aquifer Talk Held in Monticello. One day after the Illinois House approved a measure aimed at protecting Central Illinois' main groundwater source, State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, told a Mahomet Aquifer Task Force subcommittee Friday, June 1st, there is still a lot of work to do. Legislation now on Governor Bruce Rauner's desk would require companies operating underground natural gas storage facilities above sole source aquifers like the Mahomet Aquifer to notify the public if a gas leak is detected. It was in response to a people's gas leak near Mahomet that leached into the drinking water of five rural homes. While he termed the new law a victory in preventing future incidents, Rose told task force members Friday in Monticello that the effects of the people's gas leak are still not fully known. The EPA has been working real hard to do a 3D model of the below-ground surface structure of where this people's gas incident occurred, and where that natural gas may be now, said Rose. This is something that Peoples Gas should have done from day one. The minute they knew there was a problem, they should have hired an outside contractor to do this modeling and figuring how to interdict it. They haven't done that, but thankfully the state EPA has stepped up, added Rose. Results of the EPA study should be available when the full task force next meets on June 18th in Mahomet, and committee member Jim Risley hopes it results in a good turnout from the public. People need to know we are meeting and still concerned about this. It's been months, more than a year, and I'm afraid people are sitting out there thinking nobody cares anymore, said Risley, a retired Mahomet Seymour teacher and coach who lives near a gas pipeline. There is the issue of a lot of unknowns, and I think that's what people need to know, is that even though there are questions, there may not be a concrete answer to some of them yet. Hopefully, that's coming in the future. The next task force meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. Monday, June 18th in Mahomet, with a site yet to be determined. Last October, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan filed suit against Peoples Gas. Rose hopes any settlement would include the state recouping the cost for research being done on the impact of the leak, estimated at 39.3 million cubic feet from one location. Natural gas was found to have gotten into the aquifer. If signed by the governor, the bill would also require the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to annually inspect all natural gas storage facilities above the Mahomet Aquifer. Peoples Gas Director of Corporate Communications Brian Manthe pointed out the utility followed state procedures when the leak was discovered. When we learned the leak was below the surface on December 16, 2016, we contacted local, state, and federal agencies, including National Response Center, Illinois EPA, DNR, Illinois Emergency Management Agency, and Champaign County Emergency Response. We provided regular status updates to those agencies, said Manthe. We also started to test private wells located near the source of the leak. The Mahomet Aquifer Task Force was formed last year and has been meeting monthly since February. It was tasked with delivering groundwater protection recommendations to the state by July 1st, but that deadline has been extended through the end of the year. I would rather walk a little slow now, so when the time comes, we can sprint with quality ideas, added Risley. Some preliminary recommendations from experts serving on the committee are also expected to be discussed at the June 18th session. There are recommendations that either the Illinois Water Survey, the Geology Survey, the Regional Water Supply Planning Committee, or other groups have put forward over the years. So we've kind of compiled those and divided them into categories for this committee to use as a path forward, said George Rodkep, a hydrogeologist with the Illinois Water Survey and a member of the Aquifer Task Force. The Mahomet Aquifer is the primary source of drinking water for about 500,000 central Illinois residents and runs from Mason County in the west to the Indiana border on the east. This is under the heading of a case study. Bill Compton told the committee about groundwater protection success stories for a Peoria area, a neighborhood he moved into in 1974. A 40-acre lake provided water for him and his neighbors, but a mini drought in 1978 sacrificed both quantity and quality. An ad hoc committee was formed, which led to the purchasing of the existing rural water system and drilling a well into the aquifer. Lo and behold, it was a wonderful source of water, said Compton. The neighborhood straddled several governmental boundaries, which led to a push for groundwater protection from Compton's group. That included setbacks for high recharge areas of the aquifer in Tazewell County. Another high recharge area is located near Monticello, something that came up during zoning hearings for the village of Deland's two new wells, which were drilled into the aquifer and are now piping better drinking water 5 miles into that village. Compton, who has also served on a state groundwater advisory council, said federal and state agencies have been helpful, but that approving legislation to protect drinking water can be a laborious process. But he added his conviction that local residents can make a difference. It goes beyond just complaining about the problem. It's the willingness to do something and be open to the results that are foreseen, said Compton. You don't give up, he stated. Rose asked if there were available sample ordinances available as a starting point and was told that there are some on the task force website. And this is under the heading of Lieb Honored. Monticello resident and aquifer advocate Bob Lieb was present at the meeting and recognized by Senator Rose. I have a very high opinion of the Lieb family, said Rose, pointing out he was good friends with Lieb's son Terry, who also worked diligently on groundwater protection before his death in 2011. Bob and Terry's boys really were responsible in shutting down the storage of PCBs at the Clinton landfill, which is located above the aquifer. In 2015, area counties entered into a settlement agreement with the owners of Clinton Landfill that keeps PCBs and manufactured gas plant wastes out of the landfill. Next on the front page, we have this article. It's under the heading of City Council, and the headline reads, No Knock Approved. Citing a need to balance fraud prevention with a solicitor's First Amendment rights, the Monticello City Council on May 29th approved a change in its ordinances that now include a no-knock registry. Residents may now sign up for a do-not-call-style list that prohibits salesmen from knocking on their door. Residents may sign up to ban commercial traffic on their property as well as non-commercial or both. Lists of those who register will be kept up to date on the city website. Aldermen voted 4-1 to approve the ordinance change. Joe Brown voted no, saying he felt politicians should be exempt from the no-knock policy. I think it's part of our democracy for candidates who are running for office to be able to go around and communicate with the people, their constituents, and if we put a ban on someone coming around like vacuum salesmen, we inadvertently also block politicians, said Brown. But other aldermen favored that no-knock effort, including Ian Clark. As an individual, I think I would be for this ordinance. I would be for signing up for no-knock. I don't want to put a no-soliciting sign on my door, he said, but I would appreciate not having that larger company that brings in the hard sale every spring to my house. Mayor Larry Stoner said he understood Brown's point, but also felt that if politicians are part of the no-knock, then if that's their residents' choice, then it's their choice. Brown pointed out that homeowners already have a choice, but just not answering the door. Non-commercial solicitors, such as not-for-profits efforts, no longer need a solicitor's permit, an effort law enforcement and city attorneys say was needed to ensure their First Amendment rights. Commercial salesmen still need to pay $10 and apply for a permit from the police department. Councilmember Wendell Brock suggested the council check in 60 to 90 days to see how many sign up for the no-knock list. In his mayor's report, Stoner thanked Monticello Middle School students for their annual work day recently that included helping clean up the downtown business district. He also noted the first Courthouse Rocks event featuring a free showing of Beauty and the Beast at dusk was scheduled for June 9th on the Courthouse Square. In his report, City Administrator Terry Summers said the Monticello Family Aquatic Center had its best attendance ever on opening day, May 28th. He also reported the air conditioning failed at the police station the week of May 21st and will likely need replacing, and that the annual report for the Tax Increment Financing District, number 2, is being prepared. Finally, from the front page, we have this article. It's under the banner of Police, Courts, and Fire. And the headline reads, Wisconsin Trucker Used Slingshot to Shatter Windows on Interstate. A Wisconsin truck driver used a slingshot and metal ball bearings to break out the windows of vehicles as he drove past them on Interstate 74, according to Champaign County's top prosecutor. In details laid out in bond court on Sunday, June 3rd, for Judge Roger Weber, State's Attorney Julia Reitz said Kevin Lee Casey, 53, of Janesville, Wisconsin, was arrested the evening of June 1st after Illinois State Police investigators caught him in the act of using a slingshot to shatter the window on the driver's side sliding door of a minivan headed east on I-74 between Neal Street and Prospect Avenue shortly after 7 p.m. Police had been watching him and were preparing to serve a search warrant on his rig when the vandalism happened. Weber set Casey's bond at $2 million. Questioned at the Champaign Police Department, Casey admitted shooting at vehicles with a slingshot and ball bearings while driving a semi-trailer. A court-authorized search of Casey's truck turned up the slingshot, several different sizes of metal ball bearings, and materials used to make slingshots. The Friday night incident was the latest in a string of vandalisms that began in late March, occurring in at least 4 East Central Illinois counties. One of those injured a 3-year-old Monticello boy when glass from a shattered window embedded in his face. Since the initial report on March 30th, Zone 5 investigations received multiple reports of incidents of damage to vehicles throughout multiple counties to include Vermilion, Champaign, Payette, and DeWitt, Reitz said. By comparing the reported incidents, a pattern was formed. A majority of the incidents occurred on Wednesdays and Fridays. Victims reported their vehicles were damaged while traveling westbound on I-74 for a majority of the Wednesday incidents. For the incidents occurring on Fridays, the majority were traveling eastbound when the vehicle was damaged. The majority were driving minivans. Reitz laid out the details of 4 incidents for Weber, but acknowledged there were more. Those specific incidents I cited are the only reports police have given me, Reitz said. Most, she said, happened between milepost 180 between the I-57 interchange and Prospect Avenue exit in West Champaign, and 185, the University Avenue and Illinois 130 exit in East Urbana in Champaign County. Evidence police collected to narrow their search included reports from victims of seeing a white semi near them at the time of having windows shot out, and camera footage from ISP, IDOT, and local business cameras, Reitz told the judge. From video, police obtained a license plate number and learned that the semi is registered to Casey. He is the owner and sole driver of that truck, Reitz said. She said police learned that Casey regularly traveled I-74 as part of his route. With the help of the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office, police also obtained a search warrant for Casey's phone records, Reitz said. After hearing that information and about Casey's Wisconsin convictions for sexual assault of a child in 1998 and domestic battery in 1994, Weber set the high bond. Our next article is under the banner of Village of Cerro Gordo, and the headline reads, CG Water Main Project Nearing Completion. The main discussion during Cerro Gordo's regular village board meeting on May 21st was the ongoing water main project. City officials said it is coming to a close, but there are still a few things that need tidied up. Multiple change orders were presented before the board and unanimously accepted. The board approved to extend the contract until June 18th so contractors can complete the following. Fixing lawn damage for a few areas off of Lincoln Street, adding more gravel to the alley off of Oakley by the water plant, adding or replacing valves off of South and Lincoln Street, Adams and South Street, and Monroe and South Street. The valve off of Oakley needs to come up 3 inches, adding a plug to the water plant to aid with flow, cleaning general debris, and increase in contract costs from $916,000 to $925,584, 9.2% below the original contract. Village President Brad Williams added, "These are the ones we consider most critical, and we do have plenty left in the budget for the project." Engineer Tom Overmeyer has worked with Mark Blickensterfer on the project, and Overmeyer said, "Mark thinks that having a valve on the line between the alley and Washington would help isolate the system and not have to shut down so much of the system if you have a problem." Villager Kathy Eads expressed her complaint about her lawn. "There's a lot of places where there's holes that need black dirt. They took a big truck full of mostly mud out of there when they had the water main break in December, and I know they put a lot of stuff back in there." Eads showed with her hands how big the holes were and invited everyone or anyone to view her yard. Williams told her, "You're on the list. It will get done." Overmeyer added, "That's what is on the list right now. That doesn't mean this list can't change." And in other news, the village board announced sewer rates will increase by 10% effective June 15th. The last increase was 6 years ago. They appointed a trustee, Tim Allen, to the TIF Joint Review Board. They approved a liquor license for American Legion No. 117 and Casey's. They approved the annual budget. And they heard the Prairie Grass Project delayed again next year as it is too late to plant. And finally, they approved a water adjustment for Ben Peter from $1,030.80 to $272.60. And now on page A2, under the heading of Summer Celebrations, we have this article headlined, "Plenty of Free Fun at Old Glory Festival." If organizer Pat Hunter had to narrow the description of a busy day of activities this Saturday at the Old Glory Festival in Bemidji, it would probably be in two simple words, free fun. That's why there won't be a midway where ticket purchases are required or other activities that require repeated reaches into the wallet. I want a festival. I'm not looking for a carnival, which is why I like the wandering minstrel and face painting and balloon artist, the photo booth, said Hunter. Things kick off when the Bemidji Lions Club cooling station opens at its community center around 8 a.m. and continue through the free showing of the movie Peter Rabbit in Veterans Park. In between, there will be sidewalk chalk and Lego contests, stagecoach rides, petting zoo, a wing eating contest, performances by the Cerro Gordo and Bemidji cheerleading squads, the always popular cricket spitting contest, tours of the historic Bryant House, and vendors with their wares on display. As much as possible, I want to continue with the festival being free. You can come, send your kids, bring your family, and you can have a great day, and it's not going to cost you anything except for food. It's a good little festival, said Hunter, who has helped plan the event since it was revived in 2008. The festival sports the Old Glory moniker in order to celebrate the United States flag. At noon, all other activities cease while Boy Scout Troop 490 presents a pause for the pledge and salute to Old Glory. The 18-page program for the event, which will be available in kiosks at the park and at the Brant Cottage State Historic Site, includes not only a list of activities but trivia about the flag. For instance, federal flag codes allow church pennants to be flown above the American flag during church services held by the Navy at sea, but only while services are conducted. Another bit of flag trivia is that a U.S. flag at half-staff is to make room for an invisible flag of death flown in remembrance of those fallen and during times of national mourning. In some countries, flags do not go down to half-staff, but just far enough to make room for the invisible flag. And this under the heading of Cool Off. With temperatures expected to reach about 90 degrees, the Bemidji Lions Club is opening up its community center as a cooling station from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. We hope this will fill a niche for what is usually a hot day, said Lions Club President Jeff Funk. Water, soda, and restrooms will be available. The Lions will also host a chicken dinner from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., followed by a performance by the band Three Gun Whiskey from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Other new activities include wandering minstrel Paul M. Holte, face painting, a balloon artist, and a free photo booth. If you want to come and take picture after picture after picture, as long as there's not a line, the photo booth will be in the Veterans Park Pavilion, added Hunter. Activities will take place at the park on Bodmin Street and on the Bryant Cottage, Bryant House, lawn. And now, turning to page A5, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Donna Jean Jordan, 65, of Monticello, passed away at 9:55 p.m. May 27, 2018, at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. A funeral service was held Friday, June 1, 2018, at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. Visitation was the same day at the funeral home. Interment was held in Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to the Piatt County Mental Health Center. Sharon Collins, 70, of Monticello, passed away at 10:27 a.m. on Wednesday, May 30, 2018, at Kirby Medical Center in Monticello. Graveside services were held Monday, June 4th at Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Kirby Medical Center. Cradled in the arms of his wife, Larry Zimmer passed away Saturday, May 26, 2018. A visitation was Thursday, May 31st, 2018, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. At a date to be announced later, there will be a Celebration of Life art exhibit in memory of Larry Zimmer. Contributions may be made to a charity or organization of your choice. Anna J. Brock, 68, of Monticello, passed away at 7:31 p.m. May 30, 2018, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A Celebration of Life service will be announced at a later date. Memorial donations may be made to the Kevin M. Brock Sr. family. Lois P. Bond, 80, of Monticello, passed away at 3:35 a.m. May 26, 2018, at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. A funeral service was held at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 5, 2018, at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home in Monticello, with Pastor Jeff Bielmeier officiating. Visitation was from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. on Tuesday, June 5, 2018, at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home. Interment was held in Bailey Cemetery in Tolono. Memorial donations may be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home or the Piatt County Toy Drive. And now, returning to the news and views, on page A7, we have this article under the banner of Piatt County Fair. The headline reads, Piatt County Fair, set for June 14th to the 17th. The Piatt County Fair is scheduled for June 14th to 17th at the fairgrounds in Cerro Gordo. Organizers say it is time to get entries in and think about attending the fair events. The fair book is available online at www.piattcountyfair.com, along with entry forms and the schedule. This year, the fair starts on Flag Day, that's June 14th, so it will kick off with the Cerro Gordo American Legion raising the flag and conducting a flag burning at 6 p.m. Celebrate Our Youth will follow at 7 p.m. with several categories for kids of various ages to enter. Contact Tina Bolson, 217-620-8185, for further details. Go-kart racing will also be featured Thursday night. On Thursday and Friday evenings, along with all afternoon and evening on Saturday, the fair will have a rent-a-tent inflatables from Arthur and Knockerball Max from Forsyth for all to enjoy. Wristbands for the inflatables can be purchased by the day or at a discounted rate for all 3 days. There will be a rock wall to climb and several other pieces of equipment. Friday morning is the Dairy Cattle Show, and Friday afternoon between 5 and 6 p.m. is when kids, juniors age 8 to 18, and those 7 and under, are to bring their exhibits to show at the fair. Friday evening includes the ITPA tractor pull, inflatables, knockerball, and after the pull, the music of Reckless Whiskey in the beer barn. There is a cover charge. Saturday morning, most junior exhibits will be judged. Floriculture judging is Friday night. and adult general entries come in to be displayed. Saturday morning is also the swine show. Saturday afternoon begins with inflatables and knockerball. Bands begin at 5 p.m. with antics. The Kerry Miller Band performs at 9 p.m. and fireworks will follow at dusk. Sunday morning is the beef cattle show at 9 a.m. Starting at 11 a.m. that morning is the Piatt County Outlaw Hookers Antique Tractor Pull. And Knockerball Max will also be available on Sunday. And in another article from Cerro Gordo, we have this on page B7. Event schedule announced for Zip Code Day. Cerro Gordo Zip Code Day will begin on June 16th with a breakfast at the Masonic Lodge from 7:30 to 10 a.m. Beginning at 9 a.m., the outdoor festivities begin. And at 10 a.m., there will be an opening ceremony by the Boy Scouts and cheerleaders. The vendors will be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There will be commemorative stamps for sale at the post office booth, located at the pergola across the street from Judy's Kitchen. Those attending can sign the banner from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., and the event will also feature games like horseshoes and ring toss and more. Throughout the day, the smokehouse will be open. Multiple vendors will be selling food and other items. The cheerleaders will be selling pork chop sandwiches from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. at the Civic Center. And there will be a golf cart shuttle to and from the pergola, Civic Center, and Veterans Memorials. Also on B7, we have this article. It's under the banner of Relay for Life, and the headline reads, Relay for Life set for June 16th. Relay for Life of Piatt County will be held from 4 to 10 p.m. Saturday, June 16th at Kirby Medical Center in Monticello. The Survivor Dinner will be held on June 14th at the First Christian Church in Monticello. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and dinner will be served at 6 p.m. The Relay for Life opening ceremony will start at 4 p.m. with the Survivor/Caregiver Lap at 4:30 p.m. and the Team Lap at 4:45 p.m. There will be themed laps between 5 and 8 p.m. as well as lawn games, bags, badminton, lawn Yahtzee, lawn darts, and giant Jenga, and a bounce house for small kids. Lisa's music and audio will fill the air with some great sounds to keep participants energized during your walk. Teams will be selling grilled foods, chips, walking tacos, and drinks. The Luminaria ceremony will be held at 9 p.m. Admission is free, and money raised through food sales and raffles will go to the American Cancer Society. Currently, there are 5 teams registered and 30 participants, with a total of $25,400 raised to date from donations, fundraisers, and sponsorships. The committee has set a goal of raising $45,000 this year. All are welcome to stop by and check out the fundraisers, walk a few laps for someone they know who has been diagnosed with cancer, and support the cause. Piatt County has supported the American Cancer Society for many years. While the mortality rate for cancer has declined slightly, money raised towards cancer research and programs is needed more than ever. For further information or to donate, go to www.relayforlife.org/PiattIL, or you can call 217-523-4502, correction, 4503. Our final article is headlined, Piatt County Athletes Sign Letters of Intent to Play at the Next Level. 5 athletes in Piatt County signed their national letters of intent to play sports in college earlier this spring. Blue Ridge's Elizabeth Bones signed with Illinois College to compete in track and field. Monticello's Emma Helfrich signed with Illinois Wesleyan University to continue a track and field career. Monticello's Calvin Fisher signed with Millikan University to play basketball. Monticello's Tatum McCall signed with the University of Illinois Chicago to continue playing basketball. And Monticello's Brock Wade signed with Danville Area Community College to play baseball. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, June 6, 2018. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.